Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Back, coming to you from Gulfstream, and we'll be here obviously all this week, and that'll include through till after Saturday's Holy Bull, and they've drawn the Holy Bull as well as the rest of that Saturday card. So plenty of things to start to anticipate, and if you hadn't looked ahead yet, Dale Romans. Got a great picture. I'll put up a picture of Dale and Tammy from the other day. Dale looks fabulous. He's making this concerted effort on the health front, and wait till you see him if you haven't noticed. But Dale's got that Cyclone Mischief that we talked to him about 2 weeks ago, and the All Boz and Partners, the Into Mischief. So he will. Feels like he will be favored. In fact, Bill Mott, and hoping to get Bill late in the morning after training up at Payson Park, and Rocket Can, kind of an allowance type, last seen at Churchill, broke the maiden in October, came back with a November placement behind Confidence Game. He'll be highly considered. Safi Joseph's got the horse coming out of the Mucho Macho Man, Lord Miles, for Peter Vegso. Mott's actually got a second horse, too, for Peachtree, Army Mule, New York bred, that seems light on figs, but has been away since October and seems to be working nicely for the three-year-old debut, a Army Mule colt. So there's a lot going on here. Robert Falcone brings Mr. Bob, the Practical Joke colt, coming back out of the Mucho Macho Man. And Legacy Isle, who was a disqualified Mucho Macho Man winner for Rowan Crichton. Shackelford colt. So there's your, and Il Miracolo for Antonio Seno. Also coming out of the Mucho Macho Man. So Field of Eight in the Holy Bull, but there's the Swedish Chant and, all kinds of things. The Forward Gal, the three-year-old fillies. We got turn right around and get excited for another big Saturday, and really the first big Saturday toward the Florida Derby and such. Boy, I've managed to go. Well, I'm just hearing from Mike Maker. We may have to switch to actually call Rich Migliori first now. I'm just conversing here with Mike Maker, who got says he got tied up. So I don't know if that means that he is wants me to wait, or if Mike Welch will be down from the clocking, and we'll go over some things with Mike as well. John White later this morning, hour three, of course. And I did mention the San Pascal and the Las Virgenes, Newgrange with Phil D'Amato. Newgrange winning the San Pascal under Juan Hernandez. And Faiza able to withstand a good effort from that was the Doug O'Neill filly, right? That I tried the other. I think I tried the Phil. Was it the Phil D'Amato? I think it was the D'Amato that the Doug O'Neill was Pride of the Nile at 7-2, and it was Sweet Trouble, the D'Amato, that I thought maybe, you know, was going to be a good price to use with Faiza. This was in the Coast to Coast. The Coast to Coast, I can tell you as well, while we got a second, the Coast to Coast paid, where is the Coast to Coast number? I will have to look it up. It's not on that chart. I don't know why it wouldn't be on the, it should be on the Pegasus chart, because that was the last leg. And it should have paid okay, right? Because Queen Goddess was third choice, and, you know, Atone, second choice, third actually, because City Man, they haven't talked about City Man, who just sort of languished, and you know, I think a lot of people shied away anyway with him in the 12 hole, in the Pegasus Turf, but yeah, third choice for Atone to pay 960, so it had to pay well, and even the two winners, well, Faiza was even money, but Shocking Gray was third choice as well, and that came in the allowance race. I tried to get away. Frankly, I'm almost glad that I got knocked out in that third leg, because if I was live into the Pegasus, that would have been a little frustrating. But yeah, Shocking Gray paid 780. So I don't know why the all right, I got to go find. I'll find the I will search Hunt and Peck. Is it on the? No, it's not there either. Okay, all right, so be it. Mike Maker, you might as well send smoke signals. I'm saying I got tied up. Does that mean I shouldn't call you? All right. Here's what we're gonna do. I'll switch them out for Mig instead. This is kind of funny. Yeah. All right, so let's go to Mig instead, and we'll come back to Mike Maker. I just sometimes, you know, he's not known as the most communicative type out there among the horsemen. Rich Migliori is communicative, though. Good morning.
Yeah, sure I am. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm still in Florida. In fact, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving for 2 weeks. So it's now 9:34. For those of you that took the over on how early in the show I would talk about EAGLES Eagles, 9:34, a shockingly late reference to your 2022 NFC champions. Very, very satisfying. I've got, there's lots of feelings I could explore here, but I will save them. We have so much more. We have so many things to go over, and we got 2 weeks before Super Bowl.
They look pretty invincible, though, don't they?
Yes, they do. They're going to play. There's so much about this matchup against the Chiefs that's fun, starting with the Kelce brothers. I mean, having these two brothers that are so personable and so much fun. They've got this podcast. If you haven't checked out the Kelce Brothers podcast, that's going to be crazy for 2 weeks. The Big Red, Captain Andy, facing off against the Birds. It's funny, Rich, as crazy a fan of the Eagles as I am, I do not have the same feeling about this as I did 5 years ago when, first of all, my father was alive to share it with, and having rooted for decades, I mean decades, not a couple of years between drinks, but literally my entire life for them to win a championship. I was 1 year old when they won in 1960.
You're talking to a New York Ranger fan.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
No, I understand. Trust me.
but this, this is it. I don't want to say it's old hat because it's not, but it just. I'm just satisfied to be able to enjoy them, to have them play the last game of the NFL season. It's just fun. So
no, it's great. It is fun, and it's funny. Like I really have not paid attention to football much this year. Just I'm working a lot of Sundays, and it just kind of got away from me. But every time. I did see anything. It was just how well they've played and what a completely well-rounded team they are. Seem like there's no weakness. They're solid everywhere.
Yeah, it's true. Very happy with the result, and now I'll have to entertain. I must admit that I did book a ticket to Phoenix just in case. Because I'm just ridiculous and I want to have at least a potential. I've never been to a Super Bowl. I've been to pretty much every conceivable, major sporting event you could think of. NCAA championships, including '88 when we were in Kansas City . Had become a KU fan with a girlfriend who went there, from when I worked in Kansas City. Tons of World Series, including the Royals. When the Royals won the series, I was there. I was a season ticket holder at 85. We've seen golf. I was at Oak Hill when Jack won a PGA championship there. So I've seen a bunch of things. Antonio Cejudo saying hello.
And not to mention Breeders' Cups, Kentucky Derbies, Triple Crowns.
It's a good point. I've seen a few of those. That's a good point. I've seen how many consecutive derbies and God knows what. So Super Bowl is sort of the last, one of the last things on the list. I was in the Forum the last time the Canadians were in the Cup. In the Forum.
Really?
Oh, God.
That must have been crazy. Well, that please. Must have been awesome.
Well, you could get the best part of that was you could in the rafters, you could get like at the old Madison Square Garden, you could get standing room only. It was like $20 Canadian.
That's something. That's one thing, like a childhood memory of going to the Garden with my father and my brothers to see the Rangers when I think it was $5 a ticket to get in the blue section. And he would never, like, we never knew. He'd come home from work and he'd be like, get ready, we're going to the game. Like, it was just always out of the blue. And my mother would make sandwiches and we'd eat the sandwiches on the train and go see the Rangers for $5. I mean, you know, that ain't going to happen anymore.
My, you say that, my father, who became a big hockey fan, I forget what year it had to be right at the end of the war or right after the war. He said he saw every single Rangers home game in the old Madison Square Garden, the old Madison Square Garden,
right,
and buying standing room only, I think, for 50 cents.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And of course, that's the original six. And so what did they play? A 60 game? Was that a 60 game schedule?
I don't remember. I don't know.
I used to know this, I'm pretty sure 30 home, 30 on the road, and he saw every game, and I think they were pretty terrible. If I do not remember, I remember him saying they were awful.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of lean years, that's for sure. I mean, I love our team this year. It's great, and when we were living in Brooklyn, my oldest brother had a car, and Rod Gilbert was signing autographs at Green Acres Mall. So we drove out there, and we literally got to like 8 people away from getting an autograph from him, and oh, Mr. Gilbert's got to go. And I was so upset. I think I was like 9 years old, right? I was so upset, and I was such a big fan. And years later, I'm talking to Jules Villemure, who was the backup goalie to Eddie Jockman. And I told him the story. He called Rod Gilbert right in front of me. He said, oh, let's get him on the phone. He said, you believe you snubbed this kid? And Rod Gilbert knew who I was, which I thought was hysterical.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah,
that's totally cool.
It's so funny, the things you remember, but... The biggest thing is I don't even know how he made it to Green Acres from Brooklyn with his car. The thing was held together with tape, masking tape, I think.
That is so funny. I was having trouble remembering who they played, but it was Go Kings Go in that Stanley Cup final
Wow.
And then, of course, everybody pours out of the forum and proceeds to more or less riot down St. Catherine Street. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Very cool.
So we'll see.
I'm turning horses out as we're talking, by the way.
I could tell. I could hear some bits being snappled.
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. Richie, you know, I was down here, obviously, and we had. I suppose we can talk. You can get you any thoughts you have about the eclipse results and the.
I honestly thought they got most of the categories right. I mean, a lot of people, I think, took it very personal when I said I thought Epicenter was the right call, and I still believe that. You know, Taba did have 3 grade ones, but I feel like a lot of races that have been downgraded maybe didn't deserve to be downgraded, and some that hold their status maybe don't deserve to if certain other races lose their status. And if I, you know, just had to ask myself one question, who did I think the best 3-year-old was last year? I just think it was Epicenter. And I put more weight into his runner-up finishes in the classics, the Preakness and the Derby, and his Travers win than I do, let's say, a Malibu or a Penn Derby, which, you know, the good races. I'm not knocking them. I just thought he put together a more stronger resume, if you will. So I thought that was the one category that maybe there was some, I don't know, controversy is the wrong word, but at least, you know, where people felt like maybe could have went one way or the other. But I thought Todd was a good choice. I mean, he trained so many champions last year. Jose Gomez, you know, he led the with money and, you know, the toughest colony in North America he was riding with. Some of the other categories are obviously slam dunks. I like the way they announced Flightline. You know, we don't even have to open the envelope. That was kind of cool.
It was actually that was Tom Rooney that I think did that on the cuff, and it was kind of fun. And he's, you know, 3-2-1, and had everybody call out Flightline. It was a nice way to end the ceremony.
Yeah, no, I really thought that was good. I thought the team did a great job that did the Eclipse Awards. You know, Scott Hazleton and Maggie and. You know, Brittany Erton.
Yeah.
Kate, and, you know, they were all terrific. I actually really enjoyed watching it. Hold on one second, Steve.
Sure. Listen, horsemen have to do horseman things. It's actually a lot of, you know, who always, it seems, has got a horse on the shank.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all right. That's all right. I was saying, it's always fun when horsemen are doing horseman things.
Yeah, you know, I just, this one horse is a little bit of a handful, so I needed two hands for a second. But, yeah, no, I thought it was a great celebration of the sport. I thought it was a great night. And I thoroughly enjoyed watching it. You know, I sat back and watched the whole thing, which, you know, normally I don't have time to relax that much. But I haven't been working that much lately, so it's been good.
Yeah, they're perfect. Well, we'll get some other further Eclipse thoughts as the morning progresses, including with some of the winners. We'll weave them into the morning and the week. The action down here, Rich, and anything in New York. You know, certainly Art Collector winning this Pegasus, and the fact that he's going to continue on. At the age of six, kind of a. A little bit of a heartening scenario because, you know, everybody grouses about, you know, particularly 3-year-olds leaving the scene and going to stud. You know, here's a horse that wins a big race, a nice grade one, and he's going to be around.
I think it's great. I mean, he's been a hard-knocking, consistent performer for a number of years. This was obviously his best performance to date. And, you know, what do we talk about all the time? Horses don't generally fully developed till the age of five. So he had an opportunity to really, you know, grow into himself, fulfill his potential. And when you talk about horses that are going to be stallions eventually, you love to have that durability, a horse that can put together those multiple comprehensive campaigns. You know, that to me, that bodes really well for him as a stallion going forward when eventually he does go off to stud. And the thing that kept coming back to me about it was, the owner breeder, Bruce Lunsford, and, you know, the hand he had in the generations of families that led to Art Collector and just how many good horses he's bred over the years. And as satisfying as it is, obviously, to win a race and own a horse and or be a part of a winning horse, to have your hand that deep into the families and basically your creation, I think has to be incredibly more satisfying. So I just kept thinking about all the good horses he's bred through the years, and Art Collector, you know, it's going to be good to have him around this year, because I guess, you know, several of them have gone off to stud that we're not going to see compete later on. But again, talk about his durability and Bill Mott. I mean, let's not lose sight of, you know, here's a guy who's just done it right for in a lifetime.
Well, and it was very difficult to look at Art Collector from a PP standpoint and say, well, I've absolutely got to consider or you know, especially given stylistically, and they changed it up, and Alvarado, you want to talk about the jockey equation here, because of course Luis Saez had ridden him. Virtually every start except in the Breeders when Mike Smith had him. But, you know, he had been attending paces and involved in paces really the whole time that Mott has had him. And as he, as Mott explained, and Bruce Lunsford also discussed it post-race, you know, they were conscious of the fact that they didn't want to be right up on the lead. And so, when, you know, when you're handicapping, you're saying, well, I think we want somebody from just off the pace, you know, a pace presser type. That was seemingly the right approach. I mean, if you didn't believe that the funded was going to wire, and a lot of people did, and he certainly ran fine. But then Alvarado, who was so good with this kind of ride and this kind of horse, that you know, stalk, relax, and go.
Well, and, you know, too, the relationship that he and Bill Mott have forged, and when a rider and a trainer and a jockey, have so much confidence in each other and kind of understand the approach that they want to take. They share a philosophy, if you will, of how to approach things. Things really gel. And you've seen that consistently with Alvarado riding for Mott. You know, the confidence they have in each other. He's not worried about, you know, oh my gosh, if I'm not in the perfect spot or if I'm not, you know, right, if things don't go perfect, you know, I'm going to lose my job. And that's, When a trainer gives a rider that kind of confidence, you're going to get the best out of a rider. Let them do their job, you know, talk about it, discuss it, communicate. But then at some point, you got to turn the keys of the car over to the driver, right? And in a day and age with technology and headsets and everybody wants to micromanage everything, you got to go back to simple, basic trust in someone's abilities and horsemanship, and you see that between Bill Mott and Junior Alvarado. And then horses change. You know, we sometimes as people have an idea about a horse and our ideas don't change, but the horse changes. And maybe that's what this horse wanted to do all along, but early in his career he was more of a speedy type, you know, in the game. So you tend to be stuck with that idea about that horse.
Exactly. Exactly right. And you know, it seems like a adventurous time to be tinkering. You know, first start at age six to start. You know.
Well, most of the time it happens by accident.
That's true.
You know, you ride a speed horse, and you know, you get squeezed at the gate or stumble or something, and so then you got to sit on them, and then you find out, wow, this horse wants to, you know, come from behind, show his speed late. It's just a different approach. I remember years ago, I was riding a horse for Bruce Levine, and he used to hang and pull up when he hit the front. So I'm always trying to ride him very carefully. You know, he's taking me into the race, and I'm waiting, trying to produce him at the last moment. And think, you know, he must have hung with me four or five times. I go out of town to ride, and Eddie Maple rides him. And the horse is pulling him into the race. The race pulling. Eddie let him go. And the horse just kept drawing off. He won by eight. You know, if I had just let him do what he wanted to do and go on at the 3/8 fall, I would have won race on him. But I was stuck with that idea that this is how this horse needs to be ridden. Horse changed. I didn't.
Well, and that's right. That's the Alan Jerkins line I forget who is the jock that this is about. Andy quotes it all the time.
About changing evolution?
Yeah.
That's me. I rode a horse for him at Hialeah, and it was after I lost the bug. I was struggling, and it wasn't like now where you get the past performances, you know, 4 days out, and you go online and you start handicapping. I got the form that morning, and it's a mile and an eighth on the turf, and she's been running 5 furlongs on the, you know, just sprint speed, 21, 44. So I go, what am I going to do with this thing? She's going to run off with me. I'm going to open up 20 lengths. I'm going to look like an idiot, you know. So I said, well, Alan will have a plan. I go to the paddock, you know, the chief. He goes, oh, you know, good luck. Get me a check. I get you a check. What am I going to do with this thing? I walked her to the gate. I didn't warm her up. I'm petting her. I'm talking to her. Oh, baby, be nice, you know. Anyway, long story short, she actually relaxed for me, went a half and 50, turned for home. I asked her, she kind of kicked for home, and then bottomed out. But I was relieved. I didn't look bad. She didn't open up. I was, you know, length in front, going slow. Thought I did my job. Alan was so upset. I said, Chief, what's the matter? I got her to slow down. Slow down? Horses have been running away from their enemies for hundreds of millions of years, and I get a jockey who wants to change evolution.
That's the one.
He said, she has one weapon, one thing going for her in her life. And Chief forget. He goes, is her speed, and you take that away from her. What else does she have? Oh, my God.
So great.
But it actually really opened my eyes and my mind to, like, you know, that's why I want to talk about it now. I hate when I see a rider with a horse that's going well and they're spending more time trying to slow them down than instead of let them use their stride and make the other horses work to stay with them. So in essence, what a rider's doing when they're backing a speed horse up to the closers is you're counting on being able to outkick the kickers. That's your strategy. You're going to outrun Tim Waddle the last eighth of a mile. Come on. You got to let these horses stride on and kind of suck guys into the race and make them get tired chasing you a little bit at some point. When you've created an advantage and you've gone well on the lead, you have to play that advantage at some point. You got to play your trump card. So if I've got down to the 3/8 pole, the 3.5, and I've gone well, now, all right, let's start spreading this field. Let's give them the slip. Let's go on and make them come off the bridle chasing you. Don't keep sitting there until they're on top of you, because now, again, your strategy became to play to their strength. But and that all goes back to that day at Hialeah, Alan Jerkins screaming at me that I wanted to change evolution.
That's one of my favorite. I'm glad we landed on that, because it's one of my favorite things. Andy trots that out whenever there's a perfect example of it.
Yeah. And again, it's not about sending a horse all in and making them, you know, use themselves up. But if you can be two in front and your horse has got his ears up and he's striding comfortably, it's much better, or three in front, than being a length in front with the bit hard up in their mouth and you're trying to slow them down. Like, let them do what comes easy to them. Never, you know, I was talking with Matty Olver about some principles of riding. And one of the things, never take anything away from a horse that comes easy. Get your position going forward and 5 pounds of pressure. Not 10 pounds of pressure on the reins, not 15 pounds of pressure on the reins, not zero pressure. 5 pounds of pressure. Let a horse melt into your hands. Find that sweet spot where they're going to run into the bit and you're keeping them balanced, but you're not inhibiting their stride. That's when we talk about jockeys with good hands. That's the art of it. Getting a horse to kind of melt into your hands. When you watch Rosario on some horses, it's like, it's art. It's beautiful to watch. And then you see some riders, they just never get it. They're always hard on a horse's mouth. They're always hands 4 inches off the horse's withers and lean back into them. That's 20 pounds of pressure. You got to find that sweet spot.
Out of curiosity, who teaches you that exactly? And how, obviously there's a certain degree that there's a physical demand involved in that, and being strong enough, if you try to exert that control and you're not physically strong enough to resist the horse's pulling, I mean, that has to enter into it, right? I mean, in terms of your physical development as a rider and the fitness, explain that.
Well, there is, but you also have to understand that you're not stronger than the horse. So the fitness part of it is being able to get that right hold and then not move. And it's a really difficult thing to do from a physical and mental perspective to be able to hold that one position. Because horses, you inch your fingers on the reins, they're going to grab you. They're going to move. And I think a certain amount of it is just God-given ability, an ability to feel, to kind of meld into or tap into that horse's breaking point where, you know, when you see a horse throw their head, when they're ranked, and sometimes a rider can't help that. They're in a position where they're going to clip heels or they're running up on horses that you know, self-preservation supersedes anything else. But I think a certain amount of it's just that innate ability to do it. But I was very blessed coming up under contract, Steve DeMauro, and some of the exercise riders we had. These guys were unbelievable. They could make horses do things. We had this older exercise rider from Aiken, South Carolina, Teddy. And I feel so bad because I don't know a lot of these people's last names. Like, just in the barn, you know, that's Teddy, you know, and I don't know his last name. I don't even know if he's still with us, but he would get all these horses to gallop off the bridle, like really off the bridle, relaxed, comfortable, and tough horses. And I was amazed with that. And I would talk to him and he explained to me, you got to start with the babies and how to teach them to gallop off the bridle. And then when you want them to pick it up, how you ease the bit up into their mouth and they'll level off and drop their head into the bridle and pick it up. And the first horse I ever got to do that with was with Island Charm, who wound up being my first stakes winner. I started galloping when I was 14 years old. And did everything that Teddy explained, how to get a baby, and her mouth was like butter. She you didn't want to get in her mouth until you wanted her to go quick, because then she'd grab you and take off. And so just being around like those old school horse people and picking up, and when you're young and you love this thing so much, the horses and the game and the atmosphere, you're like a sponge. You want to learn so much. You want to. I wish I saw more young kids with that thirst, that unquenchable desire to, like, you know, learn things about horses. And, you know, I see, and I'm talking in generalizations, but I see a lot of people that want to be jockeys and is, you know, you make good money and have a nice living and, you know, drive a nice car. But I don't see as much that, man, I gotta get my hands on these horses and figure this out and learn. And I don't see that as much. And maybe I'm not looking as hard as I used to, but, that's why it's fun when you talk to a young rider that you see has that, just the desire that they can't get enough of it. They're eat it, sleep it, drink it, dream it. You know, that's what it's about. I think about this a lot now because when I stay at the cottage at Belmont and I walk around, it brings me back to that time in my life when I was that sponge and how fortunate I was to be around such good horse people.
No, I never know what question is going to come up, but since you've opened that window, I wanted to follow it up because it helps everybody understand, you know, A, the learning curve, and B, you know, some of the things that can inhibit a rider's career. You know, why, you know, we certainly see it as horse players, Rich. There's circumstances when you see that, you know, somebody has to get in the weight room, that they're not strong enough at that
time.
Well,
and you've got to treat yourself like an athlete too. You know, I don't know how this came up yesterday, but we were talking about it before we went on air, just in the room there with Mitch Levitis and some people. And I was like, when, even if you, like, somebody wants to lose weight or dieting, but as an athlete, everything that you are going to consume, you know, any food you're going to eat, you have to look at that and ask yourself, what is that going to do for me? What you know, forget what it tastes like, forget just the enjoyment, the social aspect of dining, and, you know, as an athlete, particularly as a jockey, because it's predicated on your weight, you've got to be able to go, okay, I'm going to eat this because these calories are going to get me here where I need to be, energy wise, clarity wise. Everything you put in your mouth has to be thought out. It's fuel. That's what it is. It's fuel. You're feeding the furnace. And if you're not putting the right fuel in the furnace, you're going to run out of heat, right? I mean, so it's so funny. We had this conversation yesterday. And one thing Eddie Maple said to me when I was a kid, and I was, listen, I fought my weight so hard. People don't even realize the amount of weight. I wish I could figure out how many pounds I pulled in the box over the years. We're into, you know, many thousands of pounds, right? one day, because I was obsessing about food, I couldn't eat and I was hungry, and then it's just in your head. And he just looked at me, and it was the simplest thing. He says, it was just like a moment of clarity. I went, wow, that's true. Like, there'll be some day I can eat and enjoy myself. And trust me, I'm making up for lost time. I mean, I enjoy preparing the meal. I enjoy eating the meal. I don't deprive myself of much. I still have good habits, though. I don't go crazy. I don't overeat. I don't eat sweets. I'm not into cakes or cookies or ice cream. It's like that's something I never got over. That was always foreign to me. But I'm enjoying it. And just that simple thing, food's always going to be there. Eddie was always good for that. And you're talking about being around good horse people and, win five races and, you'd be over the moon, get beat on five favorites and be in the dumps. And just him saying one day, well, you're going to go out to the track and get on horses tomorrow if you won five, and you're going to go out and get on five tomorrow. Get up five in the morning, go out tomorrow and get on horses. If you got beat on five favorites, so why don't you just stay steady? Why don't you stay even? He was Steady Eddie for a reason,
Well, the insights, the window into the rider perspective, Rich, you and Tony deliver every conversation.
It's fun to talk about, isn't it? I mean, this is what we do, and I know how blessed I am. I look at these horses, and I go, basically, ridden around the world on horseback, and they've given me an incredible adventure, an incredible life.
Rich Migliori, I appreciate it. We will talk to you. I'll still be here next week when we talk, and we got the Withers, right? We got the Withers coming up.
Yep, Withers coming up, and we were talking about the cycles. Now we're back into the Derby Trail cycle, right?
Exactly, that's exactly right. Once that card here Saturday, now they'll turn to the 3 year olds, and in fact, we got the Withers, the Lewis, and the Holy Bull all on Saturday. So.
And how about Arabian Nights the other day?
The one thing that's frustrating about that is on that wet track. You have no idea what I mean. He basically followed up nicely, but you still don't know what you got.
The only thing I will say, Steve, his stride is incredible. He's got as efficient a stride as you're going to see, very reminiscent of not only his sire, but American Pharoah. And I understand what you're saying, and it's hard to, gauge and get a full handle on it. But, man, when you watch a horse move like that and a horse with his size to leave the gate like a cat the way he did and getting that rhythm, he looks pretty special.
Well, that's the way the barn, I know, feels. They got the situation. You do have what's going to be a source of great consternation all week. The four Bafferts essentially, running against each other in the Bob Lewis. You understand why they're there and so forth, it's just a bit of a maddening scenario that the concentration of talent don't begrudge Baffert and his clients at all, but there's just too many of the good horses in too few hands.
Agreed. And again, you can't blame people for you can't punish or blame Bob for his success. But at the same time, it's not good for the game.
Yeah. Don't know where this leads us. Rich, outstanding. Thank you. And are you working this week?
Just one day this weekend. I'm basically very slow until probably another two or three weeks. And then we start up, and not full time, but I'm pretty close.
Well, there is a carryover Thursday, pick six carryover, 27,000. We'll look at that later in the week, probably on Wednesday. We'll preview it, and we'll talk. What's the other stake? There's the Withers and
Oh, don't put me on the spot. I'm in my barn.
All right, hold on. I'm a little hamstrung. The Ruthless. The Ruthless on Saturday. I knew there was two stakes, but I wasn't sure what. So there it is.
Steve, great talking with you. Have a great time down there. I'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it. Rich Migliori, everybody, and some terrific insights. We're going to stay. Might as well stay here. Yeah, we'll stay here. Mike Welch is going to come through in a few minutes. And in the meantime, Decky Carroll sending me a note. Look at him trying to stay fit and strong. Mike Maker's going to join us. Mike did get clear, and we got three stake wins for the Maker Barn. Three different clients too, so spreading it around. Mike Maker having really the premier day. I mean, yes, Bill Mott wins and Bruce Lunsford win the Pegasus, but Mike, congratulations to you and the clients.
Thank you.
You know, we've talked so often about what you've done with these expensive claims and what a terrific program it is, and it just seems like so many of your clients have gotten aboard this concept.
I hope they keep coming.
Right? I'm going to start, actually, I suppose we should start with the grade one, but I want to talk about Endorsed, because that's a big win, and you were hopeful to maybe run him in the Pegasus, and instead he's going to run the mile. Talk about what's gone on with him.
Well, he's an old man that's maybe finally put it together. He's gone winless, but he's run some good races. He's got affinity for Gulfstream, and two in a row, so hope he keeps it going.
What is your thought too about distance wise? I mean, here's the one turn mile Fred Hooper win, but you were prepared to go two turns in the feature too.
Yes, Mr. Breen, he ran well here last year in the Pegasus, so he wanted to give it another shot. But realistically, 7/8 to a mile is probably his best go.
Well, and there's an interesting aspect. You call him an old man. He's a 7-year-old horse. He basically has been running, 90 range buyers for years. And, out of Dance Card, the Godolphin, Godolphin bred that, was always cut out to be a nice horse, is approaching $1 million in earnings. That was the sixth win. You did reference that, he's not a win machine. But this does open some doors, doesn't it? To maybe think about things like the Carter and the Met. I mean, he's got a stallion's pedigree, Mike.
Yes, sure does. Yep.
What is the early thought for the rest of the winter? I suppose the Gulfstream Mile is irresistible.
Correct. That's logical next stop, and maybe the Churchill's handicap on Derby Day. And, same Carter, everything's on the table, mid-mile, yeah.
Very nice. And when his claim isn't even on my PPs anymore.
It was a summer in Saratoga.
Okay, 21.
Yep.
Unbelievable. And when, how much?
I believe it was 80,000.
Yeah. Well, and that, it's funny because Seth Merrow, I was on with Seth yesterday recapping the card, and we'll also talk about the $100,000 claim, and 62.5, 75,000, 80, 100. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, we see people buying at the horse of racing age sales. People are paying those prices for horses there. Why not take a ready made horse that has got a resume in front of you and you watch train in some cases? It's a great formula.
Yes, no, I agree. Couldn't be happier.
Talk about the McKnight win, and here was Red Knight, and it seemed to me that if he had drawn, on the front half of the field, 1 through 6, he probably vies for favoritism. But being out, where he was drawn, gives you a little bit of a pause. But he was very logical in there.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's a horse you don't want to have inside anyway. So I was, he gets a little intimidated and so forth, but,
interesting.
So I liked our spot earlier. He had the clear run on the outside and got the job done.
Wow. And Errat Ortiz was handed his fourth Eclipse Award on Thursday night. And then Saturday, he particularly in the turf races, he goes out and displays, you know, why he's won four of those.
Yes, he does.
The timing, he has not ridden Red Knight before.
No, he had.
Amazing, unbelievable. What do you tell him in that setting? Not that you're a big instruction guy anyway.
Not much. You just accepted the Eclipse Award. Get us an Eclipse Award moving and ride.
I love it. You know, for the mile and a half, the pace was reasonable. It gave him every chance to come from last.
Yes, sure did.
Well, Red Knight, who is a 9-year-old, Mike, and just have only had him since what last. How quickly did he come to you after the end of that?
We got him last February,
okay.
And then we had one problem after another. You know, nothing serious, but one setback after another. So it delayed us to get him started till summer. But timing was good.
You know, that's his fifth win, going a mile and a half, and the first two wins he had for you in the Colonial Cup, and then in the big Turf Cup at Kentucky Downs, and now this. Those are three distinctly different turf courses, Mike, and it really speaks to his versatility and what kind of horse he is.
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, the horse has a mind of his own. He's, he loves his job, and I think that's part of it. Because like you said, other than at Keeneland and the Sycamore, he didn't have the greatest trips. And then, the Breeders' Cup was probably just a notch over his head. And that's it.
This is Trinity Farm, and a New York bred. So another graded stake win for a New York bred. And what kind of a campaign do you got in mind? Basically the same kind of assignments?
I believe so. I guess I'll probably hold him out to the Pan American, and then maybe the Elkhorn at Keeneland.
There we go. All right, that was the McKnight win. So two graded stakes going in to the Grade One feature, and I'm sure you talked to enough. You talk to enough handicappers and have the ear to the ground on that front. I mean, a tone was a universal must use at the very least going into this. Give us some thoughts about the expectations for the Into Mischief gelding.
Well, he's a horse that always touted himself from day one, but for one reason or another, he was always there, but just not quite getting there. And he had Lease on the Lead at Aqueduct before his freshening and ran a big race. But, having said that, you can even go to the Pegasus last year and, he ran a huge race.
This is Kirk Wyckoff, and again, a pricey claim. It's very notable how sharp he was working, too. I mean, that was sort of screaming for attention. The three straight bullets, New Year's Eve, January 7th, January 14th, then you backed off him a little bit and just gave him, the maintenance breeze into the race. There were plenty of races on his page that were good enough. He just had not been, when it came to the stakes assignments, for whatever reason, things kind of conspired against. He certainly had enough placements.
Yes, yep, absolutely.
Well, this one again, hard not to put the spotlight on Errat, Mike, because when Javier Castellano essentially struck the front with Ivar, you were the only potential threat, and Errat gets up and passed. Just a perfect ride, perfectly positioned. They were going a nice enough clip, and Errat was in the right spot at every step.
Yes, he was. You know, originally we thought we'd try to make the lead with him. Red took him back, got a good spot, saved real, angled out, and the rest is history.
There you go. I suppose because of the mile and now he's won 2 mile and an eighth races back to back, it gives you some more options with him, no?
Correct. Yep.
What kind of a campaign for him? He's a gelding too, so it's just a matter of keeping him happy and picking spots.
Yep, that's it. Easy enough.
I love it. Well, last year out of Pegasus, where he was beaten less than 2 lengths by Colonel Liam, you went to the Maker's Mile at Keeneland, then the dinner party at Pimlico, the Forbidden Apple, so little Kentucky Downs. It's just like all these turf horses of yours. You're gonna show up at all the logical spots.
Correct. Yep.
Well, you know, now typically we go over the winners. Now I back up and touch on some other horses, and we probably should have stopped with Red Knight and talked about the trifecta, Value Engineering and Wicked Fast. Value ran terrific.
Yes, he sure did. Nice purchase from Michael Hoy.
And then, of course, who was third?
Wicked Fast.
Yes. And that one for Jordan Wyckoff. So basically every client got a check, Mike.
That's correct.
More importantly, how did Jack not win the Pegasus Betting Challenge?
I don't know. He was talking to me early in the day, and then after that, no good. So,
how did he blow this? The Maker trifecta paid $275.
Yep.
Unbelievable. We should mention King Cause too ran in the turf and ran kind of an even sixth.
Yeah, no, and maybe a better post. He might have got a slice because I thought he ran huge.
Not that they're, I don't want to call One Night Standard's effort disappointing, but I thought he had a bit of a look in there.
Yep,
and kind of made a mild late, made a little bit of a mild late run, Oh, Chasing the Crown, too. Chasing the Crown third in that allowance where the first-time turfer of
Fletcher. Shit.
Fletcher, yeah, at a crazy price. All right. Well, and then ran a pair in the Wishing Well at Turfway. Vax, a maiden winner on Friday at Aqueduct.
Yep, Vax. And then we had Maker's Candy run at Aqueduct. Aqueduct 2, a nice, impressive New York bred winner.
That was Saturday?
That was Saturday before the Pegasus.
Very nice. Here it is, the ninth, the maiden ninth. Oh, with another Eclipse winner, using Jose Gomez up in New York.
Yes, yep.
Went off favored and actually was a romping winner. And this is for Paradise and David Stoddicker and Maxis. Boy,
yes.
Did anybody not get a win on your client list this weekend?
Oh, I'm sure there's a few.
That's too funny. I love it. Let's look ahead. And of course, we're coming. This weekend another state card. But I didn't see anything for you on the stakes this weekend.
Yes, nothing.
You don't have any?
Ran most of the barn last weekend.
All right. Well, and you did okay.
Yep.
We should mention, I didn't talk to you late last year, and it should be noted, you are coming off your best year as a trainer last year, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
$16.5 million, and... in terms of wins, you've had more wins, but it kind of speaks to the direction of the whole operation these last, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years, more and more stake horses.
Yes, yes.
What is there any? I don't see any maidens coming out. Anything that you have yet to run, or some maiden types that we're going to see yet here in late winter?
Actually, I had a horse, Composer's Dream, that we were pretty high on that kind of blew the turn his first out at Gulfstream, going 7.5 at an outside post. So look forward to his next start.
Nice. All right. So we'll watch for that. Me and Mr. C coming out of that Sunshine Turf Stake last weekend.
Yes. Peel surface at Tampa and the Florida Bridge Stake there in March.
Where I'm just trying to, I'm kind of going through here. Where do you stand with some 3-year-olds?
Pre-light, Gaslight Dancer, really good. They both ran in the Breeders' Cup. They had some time off. They just started back their training. So, you know, they'll be Keeneland Churchill.
How about Worthington?
Worthington, we're going to try him on the dirt, Sam Davis.
Oh, very good. I'm headed there, too. Excellent. And he's coming off. He ran well in the Dania Beach.
Yes, he sure did.
Nice. Yep. All right. So, if you're not going to try them on the grass now, on the dirt now, when are you? I mean, this is the audition opportunities. What's going on at Turfway, I should ask?
Competition's tough. Taking a butt kicking.
Are you really?
Yep.
Well, listen, they're putting up real money.
Yep.
Well, and you know, obviously the synthetic it provides you. How many horses? How many do you have up there?
I have 30 at Turfway, and then another 30 at Trackside.
Very good. All right, so you left quite a few, and then how many down south?
We got 40 at Gulfstream and another 30 at Palm Meadows.
And what about New York?
A dozen.
All right. So that's a good size. That's
yep.
Yeah, it's not in the hundreds. It might be 100, but it's not 300. Mike, great to catch up, and obviously a special day. You know, there aren't that many of these that come along.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Mike Maker, everybody, and you can follow the Maker Barn. I'm not sure. You know, actually, I'm going to look. Let's see how much. I'm not sure how often. I know I follow him, but I think it's M. Is it M Maker Racing? Something like that. I think it's M. Mike Maker Racing Stables. Something along those lines. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much. I don't know how much tweeting. But I know he's got it's M, isn't it M Maker? Something. And it's, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, for those of you that are Twitter users, but when you go to search for people you know you follow, or when I start to type in, the names don't pop up the way they used to, which is really annoying. I mean, there's no shortage. There's certainly no shortages of annoyances when it comes to Twitter. But that certainly is one. Well, I'm going to have to make another executive decision. Mike Welch is expected right about now, but so is Claude Ray McGahey III. So you know what, Case? All right, good. Casey's back. Let's take the bottom of the hour break. 90 minutes in, 90 to come. We're at Gulfstream recapping the weekend, focusing obviously on what went on here. But Arabian Knight got the shout out from Mig, winning the Southwest. Johnny V aboard. The Martha Washington. The Martha Washington, actually. What, where did we put, there's the Oakland. The filly that we've been excited about really kind of dropped anchor in there. Olivia Twist. Yeah, she she set the pace and stopped. Was beaten a good way. She didn't go favored though. McPeak's filly went favored, Defining Purpose, and she also was overhauled. It was wet paint on a wet afternoon. Farga Dolphin, unbelievable. So even between the two Godolphin winners that Maker sent out to graded stake wins, Martha Washington's listed, but here's another stake win. This is a Blame filly out of the Street Cry mare Sky Painter, and she had broken her maiden in the slop at Indy, so the wet track clearly suited her, to say the least. 3-1 on wet paint, 77 buyer, which was the same as Faiza got in California. And then there was the sprint, and Goodnight, you know, who just, in fact, he went off at over 3-5. Yeah, paid 340. And I actually thought that was value. I mean, 70 cents on the dollar. I mean, the horse should have been 2-5. The Winchell Homebred out of the Cowboy Cowmare. Simple surprise. And as mentioned, Arabian Night. Red Root 1 came running late to be second behind Arabian Night. Arabian Night went off at 2-5. All right. Bottom of the hour. We're exactly 90 in. 90 to come. We're at Gulfstream. Either Mike Welch next, if he's on his way down from the clocker stand, or...